KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from Richmond in East Bay.
Tar Heel Spinall.
Dolores at Market Street.
Daly City.
Outer Sunset.
Castro and Church.
Edge of the Mission.
The Yachttown. Antioch.
Nopa, San Francisco.
Coming up, we head out into the Santa Cruz Mountains to meet the owner of the Bigfoot Discovery Museum.
It's about time somebody proved this stuff is real. I'm tired of hearing the jokes. I'm tired of being, you know, put down because I claim I saw something that people don't want to believe in.
Then an agnostic person turns to prayer after being sentenced to death.
It started early on in my life. When I began to start questioning things, I was probably 8, 9 years old. People around me said, boy, you better believe in God. You're going to wind up in hell.
Believing. Today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Have you ever gone camping and thought you saw something mysterious in the woods? Something other people just wouldn't believe is real. Well, all over the world, there are places that honor the symbols of our diverse beliefs. And the keepers of these shrines are people whose unwavering devotion is built on stories that make a case for faith in the face of doubt. KALW's Lance Gardner took to the mountains of Santa Cruz to learn how one man found meaning where few people care to look.
Once upon a time, early in the morning, Mikey awoke in the forest. His parents were already up and about. His father had been busy catching trout from the river, which he had cleaned and begun to cook. Mikey hated the idea of fish for breakfast, so he crept from his tent and slipped down toward the water to explore. In the brush, near the water's edge, he heard a rustle. Out of the greenery, a great, hairy beast emerged. It was towering and dark and manlike, but like no man that he had ever seen.
And I looked it right in the eyes for about 3 seconds, and then I heard my mother. Mikey, where are you? Oh, Mom's calling. I better get back there. So I turned and I ran back towards camp and bumped into my parents on the way back because they were looking for me. And I told them, I'm okay, come and see the big hairy man. Huh? And I said, follow me. And so I took off and running. I wanted to go back and look at it some more and ask all the questions. So they followed me and we went there to the spot and, of course, it was gone. So they looked around for a couple of seconds and they said, oh, forget about it. Don't worry. It was probably a tramp. And I asked, what is a tramp? And they said, that's a homeless person. And sometimes they stay out in the woods a little too long and their hygiene's not the greatest and they don't shave every day. So that's probably what you saw. So I learned that day that a tramp is a person 10 feet tall and covered in hair and wears very little clothing.
Unlike its namesake, the Bigfoot Discovery Museum is easy to find.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi, I'm Lance. We spoke on the phone.
All right.
Michael?
Yeah.
Nice to meet you.
It's a two-room museum of faded artifacts and disputed claims. There's no pretense, no spectacle, no irony. The short, round proprietor stands behind a glass counter. He wears a long, white beard and a cap that casts a shadow over his bespectacled eyes.
Bigfoot is a wild man, a mystery primate, if you will, that is seen by average people, normal people, and denied by science. Lots of people see these things and talk about it, and then other people put them down and are skeptical.
It's easy to be skeptical in a time when so much information is freely available. It's easy to bring words like facts and science into a conversation where they'll vaporize upon impact against a wall of faith. But I'm not going to subject this man's story to scientific inquiry. And I'm not going to give you a new and abridged history of the North American Sasquatch. Because that's not what this story is about.
As Mikey grew older, he never forgot what he had seen in the woods. But boys go to school and men go to work. So he filed away his strange encounter and took on the world.
I worked in a branding agency, developing logos and interfaces. Did a lot of work for Logitech.
But all good things come to an end. And as the fickle beasts of the Valley of Silicon grew fat and burst, poor Mikey was left to wonder what was next. He searched and searched, only to find that the answer had been inside him all along.
It's about time somebody proved this stuff is real. I'm tired of hearing the jokes. I'm tired of being, you know, put down because I claim I saw something that people don't want to believe in. It's time to get involved in this with more zeal, let's say. So I reclaimed my studio here in Felton and decided to become the Bigfoot guy. And to borrow a cliche, I thought maybe if I build it, they will come. And they do. People come here from all over the world with stories to tell.
So for the last 13 years, Mike Rugg has been the keeper of all things Bigfoot in Santa Cruz County, and his museum has become a repository of alleged sightings and perceived encounters. There's a map of the county on the wall, dotted with two different sizes of pins.
The large pins are sightings. They looked out the window and they saw a Sasquatch, an unobstructed, unambiguous view. Less for sure are the smaller pins, which usually are sounds. They heard a scream they can't identify, or they found a giant footprint, or a huge poop. That happens quite often, actually.
And Mike can tell you the details of each encounter.
They woke up and heard the crunch, crunch, and they heard the chicken being killed. They said they were walking on a trail over in the park, and he heard something crawl out of the water on the other side. One was walking across here, and she saw something cross the road up ahead of her. He saw it walking along this ridge in 1998. Here, he was approaching this marsh to shoot a Vietnam video for a school project. And there's this Sasquatch up against a tree with a juvenile about waist high. And he got there just in time for it to jump from here to here. This is where he found an object. It was a toy nunchuck. And one night, they heard a duck get killed. But it was so fast, he never could see it. I believe it 100%.
Somewhere after the 10th pin, as my eyes glazed over, I started to wonder what I came here for. I'm not looking for Bigfoot. And I'm not here to make fun of people who are, even if I'm sure they'll never find him. I think I came here to figure out what it is that makes someone care about something enough to devote their life to it in spite of unrelenting ridicule. When I ask about the plaster casts of big feet on the wall, he's quick to point out the ones he displays as examples of hoaxes. He's keenly aware of how skeptics perceive him and has grown skeptical himself of all outside inquiry into his belief.
Bad media? That's the only thing about Donald Trump I agree with. Because they have slaughtered the subject of Sasquatch. They have made it into a joke. They have trained people to think it's unsophisticated to take a serious interest in Sasquatch. And it's because of bad journalism, not doing their homework, and misrepresentation.
I tried to do my homework, and I have a few questions. But after more than 5 decades of defending his beliefs, he's armed with answers to every one.
What do you think they do with their dead?
They find a place that's kind of secret to die in.
Where do you think they go?
They go in areas where there aren't people.
Why haven't I seen a Sasquatch?
Because you haven't been in the right place at the right time.
So what makes you believe somebody else's story?
Well, like I said, I've heard and read hundreds of accounts, so I have a bit of a dossier from that on how a Sasquatch behaves. And so if the story they tell fits in, and most of the time they just slide right in, there's just no question, you know, then I've got to assume they're telling the truth. Especially if they look me in the eye and I can question them at ease. And they'll give me all the data to contact them and stand by their story.
The more I talk to him, the more I find myself wanting to believe. Not believing, but wanting to believe in and be devoted to anything as completely as this man is. It's with this desire that I take in the prize of Mike's personal collection.
Now the coyotes and Squatches are surrounding us. Now, in a second, all the birds are going to go nuts. Then you'll hear a faraway scream, and then a close-up scream, and then the Sasquatch. Right here.
Whoa, whoa.
That was the Squatch. So now, within a matter of a few seconds, all the coyotes quieted down, and the whole band took off and headed south after the deer.
I'm not convinced, but I don't feel like he needs to convince me. I feel like he's eager to share the work that he's put into this thing. And maybe by sharing, he continues to convince himself.
But I'll have to say that if another decade goes by and we still haven't lassoed enough proof to satisfy people, then I'm going to start believing that it must be paranormal. Because a lot of people do describe what would be considered paranormal. They describe what's the terminology is mind speak and cloaking. And they claim that Sasquatch can talk to you with its mind and it can go invisible, turn into the wind and disappear.
Mike tells me there's one thing bigger than Bigfoot that's threatening to close the museum altogether.
Everything that goes on in our world, the human world, is somehow tied to money. That's really sad. Because I have found now that I'm in my 70s and trying to do this, that I wish I had more money in the bank. But I was anti-capitalism, anti-this, anti-that, ever since the 60s, you know? And it was a bad choice. I should have made some money. And I deliberately didn't bother. And now I'm regretting it, see? So I know. Get your money and then do your work.
This museum feels like the best way for Big Mikey to tell Little Mikey that he believes him. And I believe him too. I believe that he believed that he saw something at 4 years old that he didn't understand, that he's going to spend the rest of his life looking for. And if he doesn't find it, maybe somebody else will.
I just wanted to say that I really appreciate what you're doing here.
All right.
I, for one, am a big Bigfoot fan. Mm-hmm. I started a conspiracy club at my school this year.
Oh, good.
And we got like 30 people come in, and our first presentation was on Bigfoot. All and right. It would have been great to come here before then, but I know I'm going to be back with my friends for sure. So. All right. What
school is that? Maybe I should start asking myself what I'm looking for. What the child in me believed that I thought I had to let go. Maybe I'll find that I've been looking for Bigfoot all along.
I think it's interesting that a lot of problems in communication and understanding are just problems of what we decide to call things.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
People, at the end of the day, a lot of us essentially understand and believe all the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We just have different ways of communicating it and different ways of
the name game. Yeah, it's just the name game.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll let you. I'll let you wrap up here.
Yeah, I gotta get out of here.
Do you have an email address?
Maybe Bigfoot isn't a mythical hominid. Maybe Bigfoot is the thing we need to look for to keep us moving forward. And maybe some people recognize that sooner than others. In Felton, I'm Lance Gardner for Cross Currents.
Lance is a fellow in KELW's Audio Academy, our radio journalism training program. He produced that story with voicing help from Katie McCutcheon. And by the way, we're now accepting applications for the next class of Audio Academy. Come learn radio with us. Find out how to apply at KELW.org.
You know, there's a legend of a creature that lurks in the swamps and the mountains of North America. You may not believe that he lives, but let me reassure you, he's there. It was Memorial Day weekend back in 69 when we loaded up the canoes and headed for the river. It said he stands 8 feet tall, walks like a man, but I promise you, he's much bigger. The Indians call him Sasquatch. The mountain men call him Bigfoot. But I'll just call him Mean. He came out of the trees as we hit the rapids. The biggest thing I'd ever seen.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Sometimes we go searching for faith in great times of need. And that brings us to our next story. It's from Uncuffed, our series at Solano State Prison in Vacaville. With help from our team, the men there record interviews and edit them into short pieces we play for you here on KELW.
This is Uncuffed.
Stories from Solano State Prison.
Today we'll meet an agnostic man who faced the death penalty, and we'll hear how that caused him to rethink his estranged relationship with God. Here's Uncuffed producer Brian Thames.
Belief is often convenient and subjective, but for some folks, it's as necessary as a flu shot. It was necessary for Ivan Kilgore to believe in God as a child, because that's what he was told to do. But doubts were always with him. I wondered if those doubts would surge or fade when Ivan found himself facing the death penalty in Oklahoma.
It started early on in my life when I began to start questioning things. I was probably 8, 9 years old. People around me said, boy, you better believe in God. You go wind up in hell. The whole concept of instilling a fear, not only the fear aspect, but the bribery aspect of it, because it was punishment involved if you didn't go to church. It was certain rules that if you wanted to go play with the kids at the park on Sundays and go to the pool, you had to go to church. And so it was one of the things where I felt it was forced on me. And as I started to get in my teenage years, living with my uncle, the one rule that he stated clearly was when you're living under this roof, you will have to go to church. I think the questioning of God didn't come until later in my life. He and I would sit down in the kitchen, and he would be preparing for his Sunday sermon. And I would ask him some questions. Hey, Unc, you know, what's the deal with the Nation of Islam? What's the difference between the Pentecostals and the Evangelists, the Baptists, the Jehovah Witnesses? I don't understand. This is when I started seeing all these conflicts. It's almost like gangs. They're bickering with each other. They're saying those guys are going to hell. And I say, man, those are some pretty strong words to be using.
Why would you question something that seemed to be working for other people? It could have worked for you.
Well, it didn't work for me. And the reason why it didn't work for me, because it was questions that the people that I looked to answer these questions, they couldn't answer. So one thing that happened, where I found myself in the Seminole County Jail, I had been arrested for first degree murder. And during this time, it was 19 months that I would be in the county jail fighting my case.
What would a conviction get for you?
If I would have been found guilty of that charge, they were going to lethally inject me, and I knew that was a reality because I actually had friends or people I knew who were on death row. And so every weekend, faithfully, they had a series of volunteers that would come in. They were Pentecostal evangelists, and it may have been a Jehovah's Witness or two in there somewhere. They would basically bait you with the word. Here, we got some cosmetics and stuff for you. You know, some underwear. You know, and they would bring these things in. And so, you know, you have to go get your dose to hear them out, right? And so as I'm sitting there, I'm talking to them. And, you know, that old fire just, it rekindles.
If you were facing the death penalty and you knew you were facing the death penalty, why were you spending so much time debating with someone about your belief, disbelief, or your disposition about a God?
I believe at that time of my life, I needed something to believe in other than myself. And I was trying to answer that question of God, because I needed a God in my life right then and there, given what I was facing.
So you weren't actually locked in, so to speak, to your agnosticism.
Well, you know, you're in the middle. You're in the middle. And so,
isn't that sort of selfish that you wanted God when you felt they're going to kill me?
You know, call it what you will, see it as you will. The fact of the matter is, I think when people find themselves in those dire situations where things are out of their control, when I found myself in a situation, I fell back on something that I was comfortable with that I knew, and that helped me understand.
Weren't you also afraid a little bit?
Of course I was afraid. Of course, I mean, I was scared to death. Okay. I was a kid, man. I was 21 years old. These people said they finna lethally inject me. And, you know, putting that in context, it's like you're trying to grab a hold to whatever you can that will work as a pillar to keep you strong in your time of need.
Do you think there's ever a circumstance where you might find yourself praying again?
Yes.
Why?
One thing I learned about prayers is that it's not for me necessarily, it's for others. So I see myself sometimes in situations where I will pray for others.
Who would you be talking to?
My conscience. Anybody that's out there listening. If there is some good in these prayers, and it'll bring some peace of mind to the world around me, then I'll see myself on my knees, and I do from time to time, praying for others.
That was Ivan Kilgore speaking with Brian Thames. Brian is a student in KLW's radio program at Solano State Prison, which is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability. All content is approved by an information officer. You can listen to more stories from Uncuffed at our website, klw.org/uncuffed. And if you want to hear more stories from Uncuffed, all you got to do is subscribe to the Cross Occurrence podcast. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. This music is by Lo-Fi Satellites from Pacifica. They're performing at Hotel Utah tomorrow night. Today's Cross Currents team includes Janae Darden, Priya Mahadevan, Truk Nguyen, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Jessica Plachik, Marco Seiler-Gonzalez, Andrew Stelzer, and Eli Werchafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tarek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.